HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Dr. Maura Finn. Maura is a GP who specialises in, or has a special interest in, female and family health. Maura, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm great, and thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Why don't you just start off by telling us a little bit about your own background and why you have that interest maybe in female and family health?
Well, my background is I'm a GP. I'm from Wexford originally, trained in Galway in medical school and stayed west then after that. So I'm based in Ennis now. And I suppose when I started working in general practice, female GPs were not as common. Women's health was poorly dealt with a lot of the time. And in some ways, I kind of became pigeonholed into women's health. It wasn't that it was a choice that I made, but then it became something I became more and more passionate about as I had my own children. I have two daughters. It's almost like a no-brainer. I couldn't be really interested in anything else. And thankfully, I really enjoy it. And I'm also glad to see that the general practice and family health side of medicine is improving and opening up all the time. But there's still a lot further we can go with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to see there's way more awareness, I feel. What have you noticed over the last, 10, 15 years? What's changed? What aspects have changed as far as you're concerned?
It's extraordinary, actually. Things have changed. There's no comparison with when I would have started. I'm in practice since 1998. So this would be my 25th year in practice in Ennis. And so the issue, okay, so very recently, obviously, everybody's very much aware of the menopause, and that conversation has opened up recently. But that was only in the last 2 years, really, isn't it, that people are openly talking about menopause and the difficulties. When I started practicing, HRT was frequently prescribed. It was a normal, common medication that was prescribed for menopause. And it was frequently that we'd have to go looking, somebody would present with symptoms and you go, okay, there's symptoms of menopause and you might take this, and they'll happily take it. Then there was a huge big controversy around HRT and nobody would prescribe it. Nobody would touch it. And for some reason, as a result, menopause became a taboo medical subject. And now it has come full circle again. So that's a really interesting situation. Now, you would actually sometimes make a case that it's gone, the pendulum with the menopause conversation has gone a little too far, and that maybe there has been, it's prescribed too openly, or not openly, but too almost aggressively now. And we need to kind of find that middle ground where we're really balancing holistic benefits for women, not just giving them medication and always assuming that a woman in her 50s who has a complaint is always related to menopause. There's a fear we'll miss other things there. So that's one specific area. But the other big areas for women's health, like menstruation and maternity, so menstruation is still a taboo. That's possibly a slightly strong word, but it's awkward. Conversations are awkward. The conversations are disjointed and poorly practiced. And that is partly our fault in the medical field, but also largely a societal fault. And some of that, the crossover from almost religious or kind of old kind of theories around menstruation have meant that women find it difficult to discuss it openly, honestly, and correctly. And I think there's a major problem in that young women are still poorly educated around menstrual health. The government policy, the recent government policy to open up contraception to all women between 17 and 25 is a big leap forward, but it's very flawed in itself in that there's a limit that it's only targeted at women, making women the only ones responsible for contraceptive care. But it's still talking about contraceptive, which is not getting pregnant, as opposed to talking about your sexual health or your menstrual health. So, even though we feel we're making leaps and bounds forward, they're still floundering. I have two teenage daughters and, I obviously educate them, much to their disgust, probably, to get too much of it. But, their friends don't seem to understand the basis of the hormonal fluctuations that happen in your period. So that's a problem, and it's not really improving. And then maternity health, obviously, government policy again does push society to change, and vice versa. And thank God, maternity cover is very good now, and maternity leave, and equally paternity leave and parental leave. However, issues around fertility and time off for fertility treatments, which are really time consuming, and talking about miscarriage and pregnancy loss, that's still something that's very badly managed in possibly in medical fields, but also in organizational structures as well. That would be my opinion on it.
Yeah. And actually, that's a great segue. What I was just about to ask you, what, when you outlined those four or five things, and I know there's more than that, how does that manifest as a challenge to a woman, you know, in the workplace? Or how does it come up as a challenge, or what could be done better in that regard?
Actually, I came across a really good article that discussed the challenges for women as the three M's. It's a bit simplistic, but it is a nice way of looking at it. So there's menstruation, maternity, and menopause. And if you think about them, they're probably segmenting them into different aspects or timelines in women's lives. So the menstruation primary issues about kind of maybe very heavy periods, very painful periods, or unpredictable periods, primarily would come around in for a young woman who's just starting her career pathway. And at that time, she wants to be seen as diligent, available, reliable, all of those things. And some of these menstrual issues might come in the way of that. The next block, if you were to put it in these very simplistic terms, would be the maternity issues. So this woman now is becoming maybe more, getting more senior role in her job, maybe in her 20s, 30s. At that time, she needs to be seen to be available 24/7 to the employer, needs to be career driven, needs to be putting career above anything else. And it may be when she's just starting a family, may have a big, very difficult fertility journey. And obviously, you can see the difficulties that can create. And then go to the next block, which is menopause, classically mid-40s onwards. And then that woman may be in a position where she is in a higher a management role or a very senior position, needs to be seen to be very clear-headed, needs to be reliable, needs to be available, needs to be a leader in that role. And some of the issues around menopause may actually make her feel less than perfect for that role at that time. So you can see that these are all biological processes that these women are dealing with, but they can have a big impact in a career progression that should, in other ways, should not falter in any way. If that woman is just as well qualified, just as skilled, just as motivated, just as professional as the equivalent male in that situation. So it's the biology that interferes with the career pathway.
I'm going to ask you in a second just about what companies can do to, you know, support that or to mitigate from those problems. Before I do, you mentioned like some of these subjects being taboo. What can we do as HR professionals maybe to make it less taboo? You know, do I as a HR professional have a role in instigating a conversation around that, or what's your thoughts on that?
I think society has to do. I mean, I can't, like, organizations and HR within organizations, they've all developed on a male model, and that's nobody's fault. That's just how life has developed, as has most other things in life. Financial well-being is developed on a male model. Medical science is developed on a male model. It's mostly men who are tested for any particular pharmaceutical interactions, because you don't want the women's hormonal fluctuations messing up the results. You know,
it's actually amazing when you say it out loud. I've actually only learned that quite recently. I hear you.
It's extraordinary, you know. So society is the issue. You know, I think a lot of organizations are doing their best, or trying to adapt or pivot, as that word goes. But sometimes it can be, you know, there can be kind of like, there'll be a talk, or there'll be a kind of like a well-being conference, or a virtue signaling, rather than actually doing something that's of any real structural benefit to people. But if women don't ask and talk and tell, how do HR, especially male HR, understand what they may need? And so there's two big problems there. One is that women are not open and are probably uncomfortable in talking about certain issues because of the taboos or because of their own awkwardness. But secondly, it's how they're perceived. And, you know, no employee of any sort, any gender, will want to kind of suggest to their employer that they are less than efficient or less than perfect for this particular role or struggling in some way that would be, you know, say it's a menstrual issue, that is going to be every month for the next foreseeable and how many number of years for that woman. So it's a transient and relatively minor problem, but it's recurrent. So you flag that with an employer. Does that immediately put you into a situation where you're not going to be given opportunities or given the roles that you may well be fully capable of fulfilling?
Yeah, no, it's obviously a dilemma a lot of people are facing. So let's flip on that, what we can do to mitigate that. What sort of policies, what sort of supports can organisations implement to, yeah, as I said, to mitigate some of these problems?
Well, I suppose that the big thing are kind of the open, you know, people talk about it kind of the woman's champion. And I think there has to be people that are identified as being supportive and understanding and educated in the issues involving women. So there must be somebody that in any particular subgroup will be identified as the person that you can go to and a person that, you know, that your business isn't going to be discussed. It's not part of office politics. Flexi time, I think that's huge. And you know, as negative as the pandemic was for life in general, it has made some of these issues probably more manageable and bearable for women. If they have flexi time and flexi space and where they can possibly have more autonomy about their diaries and when they manage you know, their meetings, etc. Because particularly, you could imagine a breastfeeding woman trying to pump in a work situation. If they have a flexi time or can work from home, it makes that so much more comfortable, so much more manageable, improves their well-being, improves the family situation, which obviously will decrease stress and anxiety and possibly decrease the risk of that very highly skilled person leaving the workforce. So I think that's a huge issue. And the flexibility, I think if there's anything that employers can do, it's that. And also to appear to be and actually be motivated to try and find a collaborative approach to deal with a problem. Because if you can find an approach that suits to an individual, you will diminish the harm that's been done to that individual.
I know that's really insightful, to be fair. And none of this as well, it just strikes me as you're going through some of these solutions, like to avail of them, there's no, you know, it's almost within each organization's remit to provide flexibility and, you know, confidentiality. Yeah. There's nothing unachievable there or unattainable there.
No, not at all. Because, I mean, these are the policies that have been put in place. In my understanding, obviously, I'm no expert on this, but I understand that policies in HR and in big organisations are based around accommodations. And that if you don't accommodate somebody who has been recognised as having a disability, for instance, that, you know, that would come against the organisation. Now, these aren't disabilities. These are biological facts, but there is a huge spectrum in them, and some people really struggle at certain times in their life. So it needs to be normalized too. That's the other thing that employers can do, is to normalize the fact that genders have different issues. Even if you have to put it in a very basic way, that men who play a lot of soccer might have more likely to be out with a cruciate ligament injury than women who would be going on maternity leave, you know. So it's just different genders have different issues. Normalize them. They should be taken into account, and you shouldn't be penalized for them in any way. But it's difficult. And I know, like, we're talking here maybe about big organizations. If you're dealing with women who are working in retail, they may have very little accommodation that can be made for them. You know, might be struggling with a really, really heavy period, just maybe for one day of the month, but having to stand on a shop floor would, you know, it's agony and difficult, and there's a chance that she'll flood through her clothes, you know, all of these things. So, you know, so that's where the societal changes are so important. Because you could have a motivated organization that'll do very well and set in really, really, really good policies that are going to protect the employee and the employer from a legal point of view. But if the societal attitude doesn't change and the culture doesn't change, it's not going to make enough of a difference for enough women.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
What advice would you give an organisation who is maybe just starting out and wanting to offer more support to female employees?
I think they need to educate themselves completely. Future-proof yourself. I would hope that my children's generation do not even question that there would be different accommodations made for them versus their male colleagues. I actually was talking to my 17-year-old before I joined you here, and I was asking her what she thought the difference should be between men and women. And she was perplexed at the suggestion that there should be any. And other than maybe a very labor-intensive like construction work and things, she could see no reason why like a man would be considered better or more appropriate. But we need to make accommodations on both sides. Like, we need to also understand that men should be allowed to be seen in softer roles as well, and should be allowed to be emotionally vulnerable. So it's not all one direction. So a company that is starting now needs to see that gender is not, should not be, your roles should not be designed to be gender specific, that the company should be gender neutral and everybody is given the same opportunities. It shouldn't come into the play at all. And that they're educated and they encourage their employees to be educated and open and honest about how they're dealing with any particular issue they have at any given time.
There's been some recent sort of legislative changes or proposed changes. I mean, there's stuff around IVF, there's stuff around breastfeeding. What do you make of the sort of current legislative landscape in this regard?
I think there's been a lot of changes and improvements made, but we're slow and there's a lot more that can happen. The idea that women would be, that leave would be accommodated for pregnancy loss, breastfeeding is accommodated within the workplace, and fertility would be accommodated is a huge step forward. But there's a lot more that needs to be done about that. And it does require the woman to be honest and open about the fact that she is needing time for these things. Something as private as fertility treatments, which are very time consuming and actually incredibly private and anxiety and stressful issues, might not be something that a woman wants known in the workplace. And this is where the woman's champion is very important, and the confidentiality in the HR setting. I do think as well that it's funny, government policy, even though it's lagging and we would like to see things improve more quickly, societal change often is either reflected or reflects government policy. Say, for instance, years ago, the mother and child scheme was seen as something completely controversial, and now it's an absolute norm. And that was brought in by government policy. Maternity leave is a societal norm. If it wasn't brought in by government policy, it may not be seen as such. We know that the states, as I say, like a highly advanced industrial country, and it's, maternity leave is not the norm. And that's just an appalling situation. So we're not brilliant, but we're not too bad. The idea that government policy now wants to pay for at least one cycle of IVF, it's not brilliant. It's not the end. I hope there will be more to be developed in this, but it is opening the conversation more. It will be discussed more openly in workplace maybe, and that again will then lead to improvements in how the HR employee balance and journey goes.
I'm going to ask you to get out your crystal ball now, Maura. What's the future going to look like in this area, for, you know, the workplace? And, you know, is there anything on your radar that you think will be the next major improvement?
on my radar for what needs to improve, which is maybe not what you're really asking, but is that...
That's a better question, so you can answer that one.
Okay, sorry. It really is the education of women about their own bodies. And that is something that I find extraordinarily, frighteningly poor. And particularly in a situation where, you know, we're all navigating the internet all the time and we're all informed about everything on some sort of level, but the amount of actual knowledge that women have about their own bodies is very poor. And until that changes, women won't really be in a position to actually look for or expect change in society and the employment situation. I would hope, just on a slight different segue, in medicine, it's very interesting. People talking about the work, the problem that there's very, very bad access to GPs and doctors in general. So the workforce problem is primarily because the number of women that are qualifying in medicine and going into general practice, for instance, and want to work differently, and quite rightly. I don't judge them or blame them in any way for that. They want to work in a family-friendly way. And it really, in essence, means that for every one GP who retires, it takes two new GPs to fill that role. And that's interesting. So what we need to look at is knowing that we are training and educating professionals to work differently. And until that's kind of worked into and into how, say, the medical system and maybe legal system, I'm sure it's the same with solicitors and dentists and other professionals, until it's worked into that, the workforce crisis isn't going to actually be addressed properly.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it did. What do you believe can change that, or do you have any thoughts?
I think we probably need to educate more, qualify, more people need to qualify, because that's probably the only actual practical way to fill it, but also that family friendly working policies are essential, and they shouldn't only be for women, obviously, but biology dictates that they are more important to begin with for women anyway. But I think that is where we need to go, that flexi time, family friendly, and I'm not talking about especially even people who've had just children, but just life friendly, work-life balances that are actually trying to improve your well-being, and not using that as a kind of a word that kind of covers all aspects of nonsense, but actual genuine like well-being, that you are a happy, healthy person in your workplace. And that can only be done if you have a good balance of the amount of time you spend at work, which, you know, is really essential, because that's how we are valued as well, but also the amount of time that we spend where we can actually improve ourselves outside of the work situation. It's obviously, this is a goal, kind of the nirvana, but I do think that's the direction things should go in.
One last thing, Maura, if you don't mind. You mentioned a couple of times that woman's champion. In an organization, who is that and what is their role?
Well, I think that somebody has to be identified. Now, you know, I've done a little, I did a talk in the county council in Clare, okay? And there was a woman who works in HR in that, I don't know her name and I won't say it anyway, but she asked me to come in. But I had gotten to know her because she'd actually gotten in touch with me about a couple of people she was concerned about already, and I thought her approach was fabulous, and that it was confidential, it was driven by the woman's needs, it was very understanding and empathetic, and I got the impression that the women in her organization saw her as somebody they could trust. So I think there has to be somebody of that nature that's identified. Now, you don't want that to fall into a kind of a mother figure, you know, that falls into another stereotype around female roles, you know.
Yeah.
But it's unlikely to be a man, to be given, you know, to be fair. But it's somebody who understands and is educated and is empathetic about the needs of a woman in any given part of her transition through her career.
Brilliant. Dr. Maura Finn, GP, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Dr. Maura Finn is one of the specialist GPs who deliver Irish Life Health's female health consultation service. If you'd like to find out more, you can connect with Irish Life Health on LinkedIn or email corporate.inquiries@irishlifehealth.ie.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.